Hi there.
We're going to start today's program with a fellow named Robert.
Is it Epstein or Epstein?
Just think Einstein with an Ep.
Okay.
You probably recognize that, right? It's Radiolab, the public radio science show, hosted by veteran journalist Robert Krulwich and Jad Abumrad.
Relationships and love, like artificial intelligence, basically.
That is correct, yes.
There may be trouble ahead.
So, when did you decide to go onto the computer to get a date?
So, Robert and Jad are not only two of the most engaging public radio hosts around, they are also inventing a whole new kind of broadcast journalism. Steve Paulson stopped by the Radiolab studio in New York, and he turned the mics around.
Now, that is such a great start to the program, partly because you never really say, this is a radio show about science.
And he would rather die than say this.
I'm assuming that you've thought about this. Do you have a philosophy of sort of how you do science on the radio?
Yeah, well, I don't know that this is a show about science or about anything in particular. It's a show that exists at the point at which a lot of things come together. We don't do science in an applied science sort of way. I mean, you hear a lot of stuff on Science Friday, which is great, but it's about, you know, so-and-so made a thing, and now they have discovered a thing, and they can make something with it. We don't do that kind of stuff. We do the science that leads you to a greater sense of mystery, that bumps you into weird philosophical big ideas that you can just roll around in your head for ever. We don't do answers, really. We do questions more than answers. I'm very inspired by science. My parents are scientists. I love the rigor of science, but I also hate the rigor of science. So in some sense, I'm in the mystery category. I like sort of the woo-woo stuff, but I also don't trust that in myself. So there's a way in which those two things wrestle, and this show is that wrestling match. It's science wrestling with mystery or with the unknown.
Or with just two curious fellows.
You know, yeah.
Who want. So that's the politics of this is very clear to me. When you live in a society where people who have information, and it's complicated information, want to decide things. Shall we not dirty the air or dirty the air? Or shall we recognize this as the beginning of life or that is the beginning of life? And these are actually turn out to be very important questions. if you don't have the science in you, then maybe you just should stay out of the conversation. But no, we don't think that. We think that you just come in to these things and you poke around and you ask stupid questions and you argue about what you've just learned. That's the theater of learning. And so a lot of journalism begins off stage, and the reporter just goes back and learns everything and gets it right and checks it with the editor and checks it with the source and then presents it to the audience as a finished piece of work, which is the authoritative reporting. We've decided to do unauthoritative reporting. But you can hear the authoring going on, you know, and fighting and all this. And that's, I think, how people actually come to knowledge. And so we want to just show you what that's like.
But conversations.
How did you two meet?
I was in my office at ABC, and NYC needed someone to help them read a promotional material. I was like, who are you? And so, and it turned out that he had done a lot of the things that I had done 25 years earlier. So he'd gone to WBAI, a radio station in New York, so had I. He'd gone to Oberlin College, so had I. He was now at NPR, so had I been. Mm-hmm. And so I just said, well, that's weird. Like you're just doing, you're like hitting the stations of the cross in a different era. So I was just curious, really. And then
we started having breakfast, you know? I mean, we did that for biweekly for a year.
Jad, were you intimidated with the idea of working with Robert? I mean, Robert, you know, kind of a legend in broadcasting circles, certainly in public radio circles.
He had no idea who I was.
He was intimidating at the beginning. I've since learned the emotional landscape of Krulwich, and I'm now a sort of an expert in it. But at the beginning, you know, I just, you know, Robert believes in something, he's going to damn well do it, and you have to sort of like a linebacker, like prepared, you have to be a nose tackle when you're, working through some of these creative issues. And I just, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing at the beginning. And so I would.
Would you defer to him?
Sure, at the beginning.
I think so.
Then, yeah.
However, the tsunami hit. As he became more able, it was probably Oedipal in some way, but he decided that, you know, he knew what he was doing and he did. And so then we would have like door slamming
Yeah, yeah, we went through really a period that was really, really hard where we would fight. Yeah. We'd stop just two ticks shy of actual brawling, like physical brawling.
Do you still fight?
He can see my fight coming about 13 miles away.
You're like, you're like, so an old married couple. Yeah. You know, this
he can like walk over to the other side and sit on a bench and read a newspaper publicly until I'm done.
When you the same is true for him. He always kind of knows when. Yeah, I know. You know, we know that about each other. So we know we don't fight in that way anymore. Yeah.
I also have to ask you about this kind of strange studio setup that you have here. And we should say that I'm actually sitting in the Radiolab studio looking at both of you through a piece of glass. And that's the way you do the show, right? I mean, you're sitting in opposite studios but looking at each other through glass. So why?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't really know.
It's a very easy answer
to
that.
Engineer. I used to work with Ted Koppel at ABC. He had the same thing. You would come and he'd be in a studio and he'd be talking to a camera. And you'd be there with him. And you'd have your camera. And then you'd be on your screen. He'd be on your screen. And you couldn't like turn to the left and say, you know I don't mean that, Ted. Because he would only talk to America or something. I don't know. I don't know why we have
no, it's completely different. It's completely different in this case. Because we edit things so damn much, we have to decouple the voices. And so the glass sort of keeps each of us acoustically separated. Ah. So that when we edit things, you know, I mean, here's the thing. And you're experiencing this now. We're constantly talking over each other. And in the edit, what I'll do is I'll just pull our voices just slightly apart so that you can hear what we're saying. If you didn't do that, it'd be a total mess. We'd just be talking over each other constantly.
I want to play another clip from a different Radiolab show. This is about the Furby toy. You are talking with an MIT scientist named Freedom Baird.
Can you describe a Furby for those of us who...
Sure. It's about 5 inches tall. And the Furby is pretty much all head. It's just a big, round, fluffy head with two little feet sticking out the front. It has big eyes.
Apparently, it makes noises.
Yep. If you tickle its tummy, it will coo. It would say, kiss me. So, you know, I spent about 10 weeks using the Furby. I would carry it around in my bag.
And one day, she's hanging out with her Furby, and she notices something
very eerie. What I discovered is if you hold it upside down, it will say,
me scared.
Me scared. Uh-oh.
Me scared.
Me scared. And me, as the, you know, the sort of owner slash user of this Furby, would get really uncomfortable with that and then turn it back up, upright.
Because once you have it upright, it's fine. It goes right back.
And then it's fine. So it's got some sensor in it that knows, you know, what direction it's facing.
Basically. Or maybe it's just scared.
Sorry.
Anyway, she thought, well, wait a second now. This could be sort of a new way that you could use to draw the line between what's human
and what's machine.
Yeah.
Kind of this kind of emotional Turing test.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Can hear you.
Hey, if we actually wanted to do this test, could you help? How would we do it exactly?
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Yeah?
You would need a group of kids.
Can you guys tell me your name?
I'm Olivia.
Louisa.
Turin.
Darrow.
Lila.
And I'm Sadie.
Okay. I mean, you're doing so much there. You're layering voices, layering sounds. How did you put that together?
It's like, if you watch film, I mean, there's a word for this. I forget what they call it, where the one scene bleeds into the other, you know, where you're tail end of one scene, you're suddenly hearing audio from the succeeding scene, and then you cut to that scene, and it's just so commonplace. And so there's some way in which I feel like the techniques of film are guiding our choices here. And then there's the question, you know, well, we're working in this medium that has no pictures in it. What do you do? And it's those are the questions which just, in terms of craft, are always, that's why I get up in the morning. It's not stuff you discuss on the air, you know, but it's the thing that kind of like, what can we do to make you see a rainbow the way a shrimp sees a rainbow on the radio? It's just, it's a ridiculous question.
And then that leads him to a church in Harlem where 100 and some odd people volunteer to come and sing. That's just fun.
Yeah. There's no other reason to do it except because it's fun. This is Radio Lab, and today we're talking about color.
And we just learned that there are creatures out there who can see colors that we can't even imagine.
Like the amazing mantis shrimp.
I would so love to be a mantis shrimp and see what the mantis shrimp sees.
Yeah.
Now, another thing you do when you talk to these scientists, somehow you get them to talk like real people. Do you have tricks to that? I mean, so they don't sort of lapse into
Crowich is kind of the master at that. You're just kind of a clown isn't the right word, because that means that you're just kind of
no. I'm actually
free flowing.
I'm consciously setting an emotional parameter. So I laugh and cough and do unbroadcasty things.
You interrupt a lot.
Interrupt myself. I interrupt him. Interrupt myself. I act like no one's looking. But of course, the equipment and everything that's going on suggests quite otherwise. But it creates a dissonance in the person. They don't know what's going on.
Suddenly they're like, wait.
It's like you've gone to a dinner party and everyone shows up in pajamas. Like, what are you supposed to do?
It's exactly that way, actually. So you're throwing them off their game to get them on their true game.
Yeah, and I've covered economics where businessmen talk, and I've covered diplomacy and war and generals in particular. And they have to be very, very careful because they're managing a life or death situation. And those are very orchestrated, and so are any entertainment. Like if you want to interview a celebrity, the celebrity has fixers and attached an order and has made deals and will include this and not include that. So it's actually, this is easy compared to that.
One final question. Do either of you have a dream Radiolab story? Maybe something that's hard to do, but sort of the thing that you really want to do.
I had one called Ants.
You have realized that
for
dream.
For years, I was waiting to do a story called How Ants Had Taken Over the Earth Invisibly.
When he says years, he's not exaggerating.
And I had to, yes, I've realized my dream. A few months ago, it actually aired.
It's funny. I mean, the thing that I do think about quite often is I'm Lebanese. We moved over here, I guess, just as I was born. I think a lot about finding the Radiolab stories we can tell from there, about the environmental situation there, which is catastrophic, or about the sectarian relationships. I don't know what it would be, but it's just a personal curiosity I've always had. And I dream about somehow dragging the show there at some point.
I accidentally had an almost Lebanese experience a few months ago. I flew to Tel Aviv after having given a commencement speech in Maine. So it was Maine, Philadelphia, JFK, Istanbul, Tel Aviv. So I was tired. And I got into a train to go to Haifa, where I was supposed to go next. And I fell asleep, and I slept through the Haifa stop. I slept through the next stop, the next stop, the next stop, and the next stop. And when Israel's a tiny little country. And when I woke up, there was no more Mediterranean. I was looking out the window at the Mediterranean. And I open up, and now there's barbed wire, which, of course, means that's Lebanon. I got out of there. Where am I? I said, well, you're now next to Lebanon. I said, oh. I said, now how will I? So I get out of the train, and there's all these guys, all soldiers of some kind. And I said, look, I need to figure out a way to get back to Haifa. Is anybody like it? So I said, well, my brother's coming up with laundry, so maybe he'll drive you at least to Netanya, which is a town. I said, okay. So then I'm waiting. And then the guy looks at me and says, wait a second. Are you from Radiolab?
Get out.
And all these parachute people that, whoa, which are you, Jed or Robert? I said, I'm Robert. I said, oh my God. I said, you just knew that from the voice. They say, yeah. So you never know. He could go and buy Chiclets in Beirut and go, who are you, Crowich or the other one?
Yeah. I'll meet you across the barbed wire sometime.
So the lesson is Radiolab is taking over the world.
Robert Crowich, Jad Abumrad, and Steve Paulson talking in the Radiolab studios at WNYC in New York.